Hello, everyone, and welcome to You Are Beautiful. And if you didn't hear it today already, let me say it to you right now. You are, wait for it, beautiful. That's right. My name is Lawrence Zarian, but since we are going to be instant fast friends, you can call me LZ. On this podcast, some of my closest friends from television, film, movies, influencers, designers, they're going to be here with me, with us, talking about how they feel, what makes them feel beautiful, and when they look in the mirror, what do they see? It's going to be a fun ride. Trust us, trust me, and let's have some fun. Hey, and by the way, let me say it again. You are beautiful. Hey, everybody, welcome to You Are Beautiful with Lawrence Zarian. And I will say this is a first because I would say this is my first throuple. And if you're going to have a throuple, you're going to have it with Richard Marx and Daisy Fuentes. Now, kids, please be gentle, be kind, and just make sure that you remember my name in the morning.
Who could forget you, Lawrence?
Okay, first of all, Richard, please indulge me why I gush. Hi, beautiful.
Hi, beautiful.
It is so great to see you.
Was he talking to you or me?
Hey, look, I'm just going to say this. In high school and in college, I was bi, so who knows? I mean, I always said to my girlfriend, it's going to go one way. It's not all or nothing. It's 50-50.
So wait, how do you go from being bi, right? Because I would think that being bi is just so wonderful because you have...
Right, why do you have to choose?
So if you're at the point in your life already where you're like, hey, hell, I don't have to choose. What makes you limit yourself?
So I'll tell you this. I always knew that I was attracted to men. There was always something about it that I found. I mean, as a kid, I remember being attracted to men. There was something about it. But because of the way I was brought up, because of the world and the environment, I went down that road of dating women, being in relationships with women. But there was this time in Mexico. I got hired on a commercial. I don't even remember the audition. Flown to Mexico, was really taken care of. And it was this Bacardi campaign. And the director wanted me and my male co-host and my female co-host for all of us to drink. So when they say green is go, and you know me, I used to love to drink. We got slammed. We were so messed up. We went back to the hotel room and it was on.
This isn't your first threesome.
Yeah, you just lied. God, I feel so betrayed.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Okay, wow.
I'm so red right now. Oh my God. Daisy Fuentes and Richard Marx just called me out. Okay, I am a liar. So can we say this then? This is my first sober throuple.
Okay.
But the point was, here I am, we're all messed up. I was looking at them, these two beautiful creatures on this bed, naked. And I remember vividly thinking, I'm attracted to women, but I keep looking at him. And I just knew that there was something about all of it. And that was the defining moment where I like fork in the road. I went and I forked down another road.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, so this podcast was born because of what we've all gone through in the last couple years. And how I used to look at the world changed drastically. And what I see as beautiful isn't what I used to see before. My life has changed. I've stopped. I've had this opportunity to regroup, restart, reset. And everything is new. So let me ask you both this question. I'll start with you, Daisy. What do you see in the world that is beautiful now that you just didn't see before?
More of nature and more of what we all really need, which is nature, which is taking care of what is really important. Because at a time when we were all going through quarantine, when everything went away, the only thing that we needed was fresh air. We needed to walk outside. We needed to see nature. And what I see as beautiful that I maybe took for granted before is human connection. It's something that I think that we all need. And that is what is beautiful. Those really important human connections, to nurture those, to hold on to those.
Hold on to the night.
Yeah.
You're welcome. See what I did there? It was fast. But just so you know, I was sitting on it. I will say it was you're right, with the human nature. Richard, what about you?
I would echo most of that. I had to find beauty in stillness. I had to find beauty in not moving, which for the first time in my life, right. And I just turned 58, so I was 56 when this started. I remember having not really a crisis. It was an adjustment, and Daisy obviously helped me a great deal by making me recognize it. And like, I wasn't showing particular signs of being stressed out or having any anxiety about it. But at one point, she was the one who said to me, "You've only known moving and touring and traveling and next thing and go, go, go. This has got to be fucking with you a little bit."
Yeah, yeah.
And I at first went, "No, I'm good. It's all good. We're walking the beach. We're so blessed. We're hiking. It's all good."
Yeah, but I noticed that he would just stay busy. He would create busy things. Yeah. He created like this internet, this Wi-Fi, like social media show where he would interview people, and he was very busy booking that and scheduling it and editing. And when he realized that this was going to go much longer than he'd planned, he said, "You know, I'm kind of done with that. I'm doing all this busy work." And the minute that he decided, "I'm just going to embrace this. I don't know when I'm going back to work," he got sick.
I got really sick. We thought it was COVID, but
it wasn't. It was stress manifesting.
Mystery illness that was never diagnosed, but it was pretty serious.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how long did that illness last?
The illness really only lasted a couple of weeks, but I had this crazy thing where I had a fever every night for 44 days in a row.
Yeah.
That's
so
crazy.
I had to get tested for cancer and heart disease and all kinds of stuff because the specialists were like, "We don't understand what's going on. You know, you're testing negative for everything." Yeah. To this day, they never figured it out. My wife, her diagnosis, and I trust hers, is that it was stress related and that it was me having to process a life change that was unlike any other.
My Google doctor degree said,
Google doctorate
said that, you know, if a heart attack can happen due to stress, why can't a fever of unknown origin, why can't just your body physically shutting down and reacting that way? It just makes sense.
And also our body, which I'm learning because I'm in this, as you, I've always been running. Like I never stop. And to me, I call myself a runner. And when the pandemic hit, the studio was shut down. And literally a couple of weeks into the pandemic, I'm rushing. I had nothing to do, but I'm running around my house and I run outside to fill up my jacuzzi with some water. I run outside. I'm not paying attention. And the next thing I do is I wake up in the jacuzzi. I took a wrong step. I crashed down 4 feet. It could have been a lot worse. But the whole point in that was the universe saying, like with your illness, just stop. Now that you've stopped, what have you found out about yourself that you really like?
Well, you know, it's funny because the next series of things that occurred when I stopped, and it was just, and then my life became, I've always had a pretty good sense of gratitude. I think anybody who knows me would say that. I'm a really lucky guy and I live that way. But there is a deeper level to all that stuff.
Yeah.
There's saying, "I'm so blessed, I'm so grateful," and meaning it. But then there's this whole other walking that walk. And so it started to become almost comical where we would do a hike or we would take a walk and I would stop and I'd go, "Daisy, look at this tree. No, really, look at this tree.
It was great. You still do that.
It's great.
I mean, I've always kind of done that. And now we're both so aware of everything around us. That part is really great. And for me, I realized that I was too used to having to be glam and done and for everything all the time. And I let it all go. And now I really love just being comfortable and it is what it is, love it or leave it. And, you know, I still like doing glam. We go out sometimes, but it's a different
level.
It's
more of an event. It's like an event now.
It's like,
it really is.
Yeah. But I also care so much less about the things that you just habitually fall into and you don't know why. You know, when I was in my 20s and 30s and 40s and I was on camera all the time, I get it. But then for some reason that becomes a habit. And it was so great to break that habit.
Yeah, but it's also a part of the job.
Yeah.
Since I am this fashion expert, I always feel this sense of responsibility. I make a good living for what I do. And I feel that if I'm out and about and somebody sees me, they want to see a little bit of an extension of that, which I love. I love the gift that we give.
Yeah.
But like you, I was like, not that I don't care anymore, but I want you to look at me and not look at me, but see me.
Yeah.
and see what I'm about.
Wait, what you just said, you know where that comes from, right? That comes from our mothers, our family. My mother used to say, like, I would show up at my mom's house, and this is, you know, going back even when I was on MTV, and I would wear whatever was hip at the moment, you know, the ripped denim jeans and the jackets and the, you know, and you just looked a little bit, you know, hard around the edges. And my mother would say to me, oh, you're going out like that? People don't want to see you like that. People want to see you looking like a star. And it's that old fashioned cultural way of thinking that I think has stayed with us a little bit. It's hard to break that.
It is hard to break that. I also like the getting dressed when I'm going to work. I mean, now mind you, I wear the same jeans and t-shirt, but it's sort of a look and a vibe.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I have so many friends that their marriages and relationships have ended because they've looked at one another and they're like, dude, I don't like you. Sweetheart, we're not the right fit.
Yeah.
How did you two figure it out? Because I follow you both on social media and I love you, Daisy. So it's lovely to see what my friends are doing and how they're living their lives. How did you two make it work?
Oh,
we loved it.
It deepened our relationship.
We loved having
Not that it was, you know, it was, we were on fire before that. We were, you know, we've only been married this December, 6 years. So we're still kind of, you know, we're not.
The 23rd.
An old couple, yeah.
But even so, I think that that would have, that made it or broke it for a lot of people.
We learned early on in our relationship that our time alone together was precious time. Was we preferred each other's company over anybody else's. I mean, beyond the sort of song lyrics of that, you know, like really, I'd rather be with you than any friend of mine or family or anybody. Like, you're my person. I want to do everything with you, and I don't get tired of you. I, you know, her thing with started to make me laugh. She'd go, I'm still not sick of you, Richard Marx. So yeah, you're right though, because we saw strain in a lot of couples, and our relationships seemed to just deepen, and we loved that time together where we didn't have to rush.
We were just still and like, alone and dinners together. And we just had this time together and with nothing to do and nowhere to go.
Because I'm usually touring. Daisy's with me on the road a lot. I would say that she's on the road with me 80% of the time. And when she travels for work, when I can go, I like to just go and be her husband. I love that. That's one I'd never experienced that in my life, man. Going with her to New York, for example, when she's got 3 days of work and I get to just be in the hotel and go to the spa and go to the gym and order room service and do fuck all and do nothing. It's amazing. But those trips, that traveling means that our time alone together is finite.
Quality time, right.
And it's quality time. And so we had nothing but that. Yeah. And we loved it.
And, you know, when you meet a little bit later in life, like we did, we realized that we don't know how much time we have left together. We have so much to catch up on. You know, we met.
I love that. I love
that. In the middle
that.
Of life. And it's just, we don't have time for bullshit. That we're not going to spend the little time that we have left in the world, in life, together, fighting and arguing over stupid shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but so many people do that. You know, one of my favorite sayings, you know, as Daisy, as you and I have talked about, being sober, I live my life so differently now. And, you know, one of the things that I learned was, what would I be without my story? And we get so stuck in that routine. What would I be if I didn't have this to think about or that to talk about? Or, oh my God, my mother and father were so X, Y, and Z. Well, it's all happened. I mean, it's already done.
Yeah.
And now when I look in the mirror, you know, because that was one of the hardest things for me to ever do, to actually look in the mirror and look at myself. I'm cool. I'm a good guy. Like, I look, like, for me to say that, like, to look in the mirror and like what I see. I mean, the last couple of years have allowed me and forced me to do that. But
yeah.
So let me ask you this, Daisy, when you look in the mirror, what do you see?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one because during the pandemic, when I say to you, I really enjoyed not having to wear makeup and, you know, I couldn't do my hair and I was seeing all my gray hairs come in and I didn't get my nails done or pedicures or, and it was just raw. Like many of us, I saw myself age like 10 years within that 1 year, you know, and I loved and hated it because it forced me to look at myself and I hated that I'm getting older and I don't look like myself. I don't look like what I remember me to look like.
Yeah, I get it.
But that's not, you know, it's not good or bad. It's just something that I have to adjust my thinking to. And sometimes I have a better time with it than others. I think being a woman in this business is really tough. It's not for wimps. And when you become a woman in your 50s in the entertainment industry, you really have to get thick skin and you have to be okay with aging. And I think it's a process and I'm not 100% okay with it, but I'm working on it.
So then what do you do then with like your relationship with social media? Because I find social media can be extremely helpful, keep you along for the ride with people that you adore. But also I find that so many people get stuck, and especially these young girls that try to emulate these influencers that are using filters and changing the shape of their bodies.
Yeah.
And to me, that's telling them that who they are is not enough.
Yeah.
So how do you ride that balance?
Well, I definitely pick the photos. I also don't want to put unflattering photos because I don't have to.
Right.
Nobody wants to see unflattering photos, first of all. And people are going to say what they say regardless. So I just choose photos that I like, that I feel okay with. And do I use filters? Sure. Do I clean up the photos a bit? Sure. I don't change my body shape. I don't change my bone structure. I will brighten up a photo. I will get rid of a shadow. I will soften a wrinkle. But why not? You know, I understand that that's what I'm doing. And I get that that's not real life. But when I look at other photos on Instagram, I can see that as well.
Right.
I'm like, oh, that's a great picture. Sure, they used a little filter, but I can also see when they use 47 filters. And it's like, oh my God, what, are you kidding me? You know, there's a happy medium there somewhere.
So let me ask you this, Richard. When you look in the mirror at yourself, what do you see?
Older. I've been having sort of a, you know, for lack of a better term, I've been having my own vanity project lately. And I've been looking at why things mattered to me about my appearance previously. Why do they matter to me now? How can I eliminate as much of that from my, I figure like if my brain and my soul, if you look at it like a hard drive, I only have so much storage.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend a lot of that storage worrying about, do I look older? How do I look? You know, one thing that Daisy and I have in common, although obviously in entirely different ways, and men have it a lot easier, but we started really young in our careers. And even though I put my heart and soul into the art of what I do and the creativity of what I do. And to me, it's all about the songwriting and the production and my performance on stage and my voice and all those things and my musicianship. I also, from the get-go, got labeled a cute guy. And the videos, I know that they made a difference. And I knew that the way that I looked was a factor.
Can we talk about the hair quickly?
So
yeah,
cute.
You wanna see? It's still hanging in there, but I'm letting it go gray now.
No, hair's good now. But dude, I used to try to create the Richard Marx hairstyle with my hair. I mean, literally, I'll send Daisy some photos. My twin brother and I had the Richard Marx hair.
All right. You had the mullet? You were like mullet bros?
Never mullet, but I had the big hair on top. Like I was in, I was on fire.
I love it.
You know, what's interesting. I also love the fact I love imaging and all of that. I also love the fact that sitting and looking at the two of you, it does seem like there's a God shot behind you because of that bright light.
Yeah.
You see that behind you? No, look. I'm all into God shots. I'm all into the universe. I'm into all of that imaging.
Yeah.
And it looks like the two of you were just sort of framed with, I don't know, some beautiful bright lights. I'm going to jump around a little bit. You know, when I started in this business, the universe put me, God put me where I was supposed to be. I was a model and I wanted to do 800,000 things. But one door opened and I walked in another door and I've been working now for 25 years. And for me, it's never been about the label that somebody wears. It's never been about the celebrity I'm interviewing. It's always about a feeling that someone gets.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say a couple of things. Daisy, from the moment we met, I've always had this feeling of like you're Daisy Fuentes. I mean, I remember vividly meeting you and I'm like, oh my God, I'm meeting like one of the 50 most beautiful women in the world. It's Daisy Fuentes. And the thing that you did is you saw me and you created a space where I was seen and I was heard and I was acknowledged. And then when we started to hang out a lot more and then work together on Entertainment Tonight, your clothing line was so specific. You were so specific about, yes, you loved the look, but it was also about the feeling.
Yeah.
Where did that come from for you?
I'm not really sure where it came from, but I've always loved, ever since I was in my early teens, I've always loved helping my friends look beautiful and feel beautiful. So from an early age, I was always the one who would do their hair, who would do their makeup. Whenever we would go out, I was the last one to get ready. So everybody looked like a total glamazon and I just had 5 minutes to get ready. But I really enjoyed that. And I enjoyed helping my friends look glam and feel wonderful. And I think that's probably where it started. It feels good to me to empower women and to make people feel good. I really do enjoy that. And so when I had the chance to do my brand, and I started with just a simple sportswear line, I wanted it to be fashion that didn't break the bank for women, but I wanted it to have an element of trend. And I wanted women to feel like, oh, I didn't have to spend a lot on this and look how great it looks. And it makes me feel comfortable and in style and fashionable. And I love that.
Because it's never about the label. And you've always been so expressive and inclusive, wanting every woman to feel something. And since we don't know each other, Richard, I did a little research on you. And a quote that you said, which sort of stuck with me, which is why I love the concept of the feeling. You said, for me, being a musician is not about an image or controversy or what looks cool. It's about the music. It comes down to having the privilege of expressing yourself.
Yeah.
And to me, that is the most important. So when people listen to your songs, what do you want from them to feel?
That's a good question. And the first thing that comes to my mind is I've always wanted people to believe me.
Wow.
I've always wanted it to be authentic. Not every song I've ever written is based upon something that happened to me. It definitely has something to do with maybe someone I know, or sometimes it's, you know, scenarios you make up. But there's always, even in a fictitious scenario in a song, there's always some part of me that's authentically in it. And I think that it translates to when I'm tour and I do shows, I always say that for me, the show is what happens in between the songs. Because when I go on the road, if it's just me, solo acoustic, which it is a lot, where it's just me and a guitar and a piano and the audience, I'm very confident in performing the songs. When I'm with my band, I have a kick-ass band. We have a blast. It's a fun rock and roll show. It's great musicianship. The performances of the songs, I'm always, and I don't mean this in a cocky way, but we're prepared. We're ready to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't screw it up. And, it, you know, they're really good performances. That doesn't necessarily equal an entertaining show, because I'm sure we've all seen artists or bands who they sing great and they perform great, but they don't talk or they don't interact with the audience. And you feel like you didn't know them. And I want my audience to walk out of there wanting to go have a martini with me. You know, I want them to feel like they hung out with me for
like
a couple
they've
hours.
Created a relationship.
Yeah.
Daisy, do you have a favorite Richard Marx song? And do you ever say, honey, sing that song to
the
me.
Ones I wrote about her.
Yeah. I love all of those for sure, but it depends. I like them all. There are very few of them where I'm like, that's not my favorite. I think.
No, would that be hilarious? You're Richard, you're playing one of your songs and Daisy's like, meh.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's very rare, but
it's very rare.
It happens.
One of my favorite songs, so crazy, it so dates me, is What About Me?
That
is favorite songs with Kim Carnes. Always cuts me to the core because I was one of those kids that was still finding out who I was.
Yeah.
And I have an identical twin brother and we're both gay and we both have the exact same taste. And he has always has had a little more swagger than I do.
Yeah.
And the guys and the girls always chose him over me. So it was always like, what about me?
Me?
That song. I also loved Dance With My Father.
Yeah.
My father loved that song. And it's amazing how music can bring you closer. That brought us closer.
Yeah.
But the one song that you wrote is Ready to Fly. I've always had wings, I wasn't ready to fly.
A lot of people don't know that one. I mean, it was later in my career and it's one of my favorite songs I've ever written. It was therapy for me when I wrote that song and sang it. And I'm really happy that you picked that one. That's a really special song.
Yeah,
that's,
you're going for the deep cut.
That's a deep cut.
And I will tell you this. You know, my mom said this to me. I used to travel all the time. And my mom would say, I love you, sweetheart. I'm like, I love you too, mom. And she'd say, angels on your wings.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what that means. She said, well, honey, when you fly, I want the angel wings to carry you from A to B. Oh,
yeah.
And now I say it to everyone. And now my friends say it to their partners, to their wives, to their husbands, to their children. And I love
that. That's a nice legacy.
Angels on your wings. Yeah.
That's
I always think about
so
that.
That's beautiful. A nice legacy.
Okay. I'm going to throw out a couple things and I'll go back and forth. Tell me the first things that pop into your mind. Okay. Richard, what was one of your favorite jingles that you sang for your dad?
If you believe in peanut butter, you gotta believe in Peter Pan.
And do you sometimes think about that? You're like, oh my God, that this will never get out of my head.
Oh, no, no. I mean, those jingles that I did, you know, I did my share of them, but the ones that my father wrote, I mean, hundreds of them that were famous. You know, ask any mermaid you happen to see, what's the best tuna chicken of the sea?
Wait, hold on. Wait. That was your dad?
Yeah, my dad wrote that.
And his mom sang it.
And my mom sang it.
Shut up.
Yeah. And
okay,
they did two scoops of raisins and a package of Kellogg's Raisin Bran. My dad wrote
this
it
is
and my mom
youth.
Sang it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that is fantastic.
Okay, yeah, pretty cool.
Wow. Okay, hold on. Digest it. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, Daisy, soap opera, loving.
Another lifetime. I enjoyed it.
What was that girl like?
Open, fun, a little fearless. Those were good times. That was an experimental phase where everybody was telling me you should act. And I did a little bit of the acting and it's not that I hated it. I enjoyed it. There was 50% of the job that I hated, which was the auditioning process and not knowing what people were expecting from me, what they wanted to see. You know, they want the Hispanic girl, but I'm not Hispanic enough. And they want, you know, the MTV girl, but I don't know. It was just a weird time in figuring out and learning about this whole other business and whether or not I wanted to be a part of it.
Can I interject something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because this is very selfish, but from the time I fell in love with Daisy, I started archiving her career.
Right.
And so I find things that she hasn't seen in ages.
Yeah.
I have a weekly YouTube search where I sign up.
It's amazing.
For lists.
Swear to God.
And every couple of weeks, there'll be somebody will post some video I've never seen and I get fired up. It's like, oh, it's another interview. I never saw you. This is another Lisa Gibbons interview, whatever the fuck it was, right? And I love it. And I've got it all archived and I've got it all organized. And early on when we were dating, I said, wait a minute, because I never watched soap operas. I never watched soap operas. I said, you were on that show Loving on ABC? She said, yeah, like a year or two. I've tried everything I know to try to find even a scene from it. So if any of your listeners have anything on an old VHS.
Wait, hold on. You just can't ask for that. What do we get?
You get the joy of knowing that you made me happy.
I don't know. I think, look, I'll take on that challenge. I don't know. I think I want a song. We're lovers now. The three of us are lovers.
I'll trade you.
It's my sober
dude.
Trouble.
If you can find me an episode of Loving, oh, I'll come to your place and sing Ready to Fly on repeat.
Oh,
in person.
Okay.
With a mullet wig.
Don't write a check you can't cash. I'm telling you right now. And I know that we live close. So I'm telling you right now.
So
okay, it's a deal. That's a promise.
It is on.
Okay.
That is so, okay. You have made me so happy right
Challenge
now.
Challenge accepted.
I don't even remember any of that.
When I find that footage.
Yes.
I know
people in high places.
I have faith in you.
Okay. I'm going to make that happen.
Okay.
I'm definitely going to make that happen. Okay. A couple more word things. Okay. Daisy, Dick Clark.
Oh, love, genius, legend. One of the most successful TV stars and producers ever.
Can I brag for a second? I agree with everything you said, but guess where my career started? We're going hopping. I was on American Bandstand
no
for 4
way.
Years.
Wow.
Let me just tell you something. Didn't know my head from my ass. Number one, the polo shirts, Lacoste, double layered. I had white shorts. I had on more Indian Earth. Now, Richard, do you know what Indian Earth is?
No.
Oh, Daisy, it was magic, wasn't it? You literally had this bottle that you would write. You didn't know what Indian Earth is either?
No.
Daisy, it literally was like a tan in a bottle. You would rub the tip of the, that sounds horrible. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm in.
I was going to say.
Okay, you would just take the powder puff or whatever it is and you would dab it and then you'd rub it all over your face.
So it's like man tan.
Or the Beyonce glow or the J-Lo glow or whatever that is.
Yeah.
But I was on American Bandstand and Dick Clark was the nicest, kindest, sweetest man ever. And I saw everyone. So let's go from that.
Wait, real quick. I did, you know, all the Dick Clark shows, New Year's Rockin' Eve, and I worked with him on a lot of different American Music Awards. And again, same thing. I echo that. He was such a gentleman and such a pro. And in the 90s, like mid-90s, my ex-wife and I were flying to Hawaii. And we got on the plane and we were just, you know, settling and putting our stuff up. And we look over and it's Dick Clark and his wife. And they're on the same flight. And they're sitting right next to us. And Dick says, "Richard." And I immediately just, and he went to give me a hug and I backed up and I made this face and I just started shaking my head. I went, "Oh man, oh man." He goes, "What's the matter?" And I said, "This is lame." He goes, "What?" I said, "If this plane goes down, I'm going to be known as also on board."
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yes, Dick Clark was the nicest man. And the nicest. On American Bandstand, I saw everybody. I saw Madonna's first performance. I saw
Prince.
All of them. So let me ask you this, because you were a backup singer for so many. When you think of Lionel Richie, Richard, go.
Gracious, life-changing. I could do an hour on, you know, my gratitude and love for Lionel Richie. He really did change my life. You know, I mean, think about a guy who was in 1981, I'm a junior in high school. He's arguably, next to Michael Jackson, the most successful person in the music business. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He hears a demo cassette of this guy he's never heard of. My phone number's written on the back. He listened to the tape and he called me to encourage me, told me to, I should, you know, when you graduate from high school, you should move to LA. And then I do that and I move out to LA and he says, "Come visit me." And I'm in the studio making my first solo record and I go visit him and then I end up singing background vocals on it. And then he recommends me to Kenny Rogers and Kenny Rogers cuts one of my songs. It all leads back to Lionel Richie. And the good news is we're still in touch and I regularly just text him, "Thank you for changing my life."
No, but I love that you do that. So many people forget where they come from, but I think that just keeps you grounded in that gratitude.
He's such a gracious, classy, he's such an elegant man.
He is. And he still has chops.
Oh yeah, he's great.
He sings so beautifully.
Yeah.
Okay, so is there something, Daisy, when you want to feel really sexy, that you throw on? What's your go-to?
Perfume.
Not just perfume.
Richard Marx.
She puts on Richard Marx, literally.
So perfume is what makes you feel sexy. Is there a specific perfume that is your go-to?
Clive Christian.
Okay.
And I think that working out also gives me a little bit of an endorphin that makes me feel good. So having a good workout, I don't know, just being casual. Being casual, being comfortable makes me feel good.
Richard, is there something you wear? Is there something that you throw on that you're like, "Bow, bow, 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 bow. I want to feel sexy for my Daisy"?
Well, let me preface this by saying we make a point to live a pretty sexy existence with each other. You know, we tell couples, especially like my sons who are all in relationships, one of the pieces of advice I give is don't get too comfortable. Don't leave the bathroom door open. Don't be gross. You know what I mean? Like, no matter how much you love someone, keep an air of elegance and sexiness and like, don't take it for granted. So we kind of have that. And the way we have our cocktail in the evening and the way we love just to sort of sit and talk over a drink or just, or our morning coffee. And like the way we approach our lives is kind of sexy, but I think it's when we go somewhere, even if we just go to a local restaurant that's not fancy.
You put a little effort into it.
I put effort into it. I put on a jacket with a pocket square. I want to look sharp for my wife. I want to walk downstairs when it's time to go and have her look at me and go, "Damn, that's what I want."
And you're also showing Brandon, Jesse, and Lucas how to treat a lady.
Yeah.
They definitely learned that.
I'm proud to say that all three of my sons are really gentlemen.
All three of them still open the door for their girlfriends, the car door and all the doors. And, you know, they're so courteous and gentlemanly with them.
I'm going to tell you this right now. There are three boys in my family. And if one of us did not stand for a woman, if one of us did not open up a door, if one of us did not say something like "thank you" or "please, we got the dad stink eye," our nephews will not, do not walk out of an elevator before a woman. And we're teaching them how to be kind.
Courteous. Gentle. Courteous. Yeah. Courtesy is something that's a lost art. It's important. I think it goes both genders, but particularly I find it inelegant. I don't like to be or do anything that is considered inelegant. And so to me, courteousness and courtesy is elegant. And my father didn't teach it to me. He just was. He was courteous and he was elegant and he was respectful of women. And so I just sort of watched him and went, that's the way to be. And I Same thing with my sons. I never sat down and had lectures. I didn't have to lecture them. They just watched me.
You lead by example.
And I think we've lost a little bit of that.
We've lost a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, I love how men have become more sensitive and more communicative.
Yes.
But I don't think that they should completely go in that direction. You know what I mean? I think that men and women are equal, but we're not the same. So it's important, especially in a romantic relationship of a man and a woman, it's important to keep the core of what attracted you to each other in the first place.
One of my favorite things about a woman is protecting a woman.
Yeah.
I am so attracted to women, all of it. Like Daisy, I think like you're hot and you're kind and you're loving and you're sexy. And you know, you're one of those women that I would look up and I'd be like, seriously, I'm gay? Like, look at who's in front of me. Like, you're just
you're,
like, literally,
you're
I've
so
had some women
sweet.
Like that.
Thank
in my
you.
Life. Come
That's
on.
True, man.
I mean,
imagine how I feel.
But you are such a beautiful woman. And there's something about being around a woman that I take great pride in, you know, on the sets. I'm always taking care of a woman, grabbing her hand, walking her to set. There's something about the masculine taking care of the feminine. Mm. And to me, men should never, ever lose
that. Yeah, I think you're right. When we first met, I'd been so used to just being alone and not being alone because I'd been in relationships, but I had my independence and I had my freedom and I was in control of my life and my work. And I was so like, I'm the boss. I didn't need a man. Look, I mean, I'm doing great without a man.
Yeah.
That when Richard came around, it took me a while. He had to teach me how to let him just be there for me. Even though he knew it was things that he knew I could do myself, he wanted to do some things for me. He wanted to go to a doctor's office, a doctor's appointment with me. He just wanted to keep me company. He wanted to take the initiative on some things. And it was hard for me to step back and be like, oh, I have a partner now. You're right.
And little by little, Lawrence, it happened gradually. And then when we got married, she was like all in. Then she was like a girl.
I was like, you need to do everything.
She was a total girl after we got married. It was awesome. But I saw these little gradual levels of her letting me just be her man.
Well, that also comes from trust.
Yeah. It took time. But I would see these little cracks in the armor. And she would surrender another little piece of it. And she would, okay, well, I'll let you do that. And it was so, to this day, even though we've been together for a while, I love when she comes to me and says, will you do this for me? Will you help me with this? Will you make this call for me? Will you help me? Whatever. I love it.
It's sweet.
You can also see it. I mean, it's palpable with the joy and the respect that you two have for each other. I mean, it literally is pure joy and pure happiness.
Thank you.
I have one more question and then one more comment. Richard, you now have to follow me on Instagram. I mean, it's since we're
fine
now, it has to happen. Number one. Okay. Don't say it like that. You have to be more enthusiastic.
Well, let's see how you do with the loving clip.
Okay, so let's get to that. I'm telling you right now, dude, buckle up, because I'm going to make that happen.
Oh my God.
Daisy knows where I live, and you are going to come to my house and sing a song of choice.
Okay. Of choice.
You're committed.
Of my choice or
of
your choice?
Of my choice. Okay, and Daisy, you will be there. You'll get to see it happen.
Oh, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Okay, so this podcast is called You Are Beautiful with Lawrence Arion. So I'm going to ask each one of you as we wrap it up to answer this question by repeating what I say. Daisy, you go first. I, Daisy, am beautiful because...
I, Daisy, am beautiful because I am kind and compassionate.
True. Love that. And I love that you can say it and own it.
Yes. I try to be that all the time.
But you also are that. And side note, you know, when you say you when you're going out and you see the way people treat waiters and servers and all of that, they show you who they are.
Yeah, 100%. Totally.
I've known you for so long, Daisy. You always take the time to say hello to everyone, and you're never disrespectful, and you're always kind and genuine.
Thank you.
True.
That never goes unnoticed. Richard, repeat after me. I, Richard, am beautiful because...
I, Richard, am beautiful because I'm inherently loyal and grateful. And I try to wear both of those things on my sleeve on a daily basis.
I love that. Since we are now in a committed relationship, I, Lawrence Arion, am going to be kind and loving and considerate to both of you. I will bring you coffees in the morning. I can be in the middle. I can be big spoon or little spoon. Daisy, I love it. I called. I asked if you would be a part of this. You said yes.
Of course.
You've always said yes.
Yes.
Look what you got us into.
Yes.
A thrive. Yes.
Wait, I also want to hear, Lauren Zarian, am beautiful because...
I've been doing this podcast for a while and nobody's ever asked me to do that.
That's such a Daisy Fuentes move.
I, Lauren Zarian, am beautiful because I'm teachable.
That's a good one.
That is good. That is beautiful.
Daisy, I love you so much.
I love you back.
I love you so much. And Richard, what a thrill. What a pleasure. You guys, this meant the world to me. We will be in touch very soon. And thank you for making this happen.
Thank you. Pleasure.